Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Anand Rathi Wealth Limited Q2 and H1 FY 2024 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involves risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Feroze Azeez, Deputy CEO for Anand Rathi. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Azeez.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, and thank you everyone for joining the earnings conference call for the quarter and half-year end, 30th September 2023. With me, I have Mr. Jugal Mantri, the Group CFO, Mr. Rajesh Bhutara, CFO of the company, Mr. Chetan Shenoy, Executive Director and Head, Product and Research, Mr. Vishal Sanghavi, Head, Investor Relationships, and our investor relations advisor, SGA Group. India's position as one of the world's fastest-growing economy continues to attract investments in equity markets. At Anand Rathi, we have placed a strong emphasis on providing comprehensive, well-researched, data-backed wealth solutions to our clients. This approach has been a key factor in our achievement of several milestones over the years, and we look forward to building on this success in the future as well. In H1 FY 2024, our revenue grew by about 35% year-on-year to rupees 368 crore, while our profit after tax increased by 34% year-on-year to rupees 111 crore. We have also revised our guidance upwards for the full financial year 2024. Revenue guidance revised to rupees 720 crore from the earlier guidance of rupees 661 crore. The profit after tax guidance is revised as well to rupees 220 crore from the earlier guidance of rupees 205 crore. Our success can be attributed to our uncomplicated, holistic approach, which has resulted in an impressive 34% year-on-year growth in the AUM as well, and hence the AUM stands at rupees 47,957 crore at September end 2023. Furthermore, we have expanded our client base to 9,212 families as of September 2023, cementing our reputation as a high-quality wealth management solution provider. We have added 40 new relationship managers on a net basis over the past 12 months. A reflection of our entrepreneurial work culture is, we have had zero regret attrition in this quarter as well. Our client-centric approach has been a driving force behind our success so far, and we are confident that it will continue to fuel our growth trajectory in the future, too. Now, moving on, I would like to share our flagship private wealth vertical's performance for the second quarter and the half year ending FY 2024. Our flagship private wealth vertical, AUM, grew by about 33% year-on-year and stood at 46,571 crore. Our equity mutual fund net flows grew by 14% year-on-year. This highlights and solidifies the value we add to our client families by offering holistic and uncomplicated wealth solutions. In the first half of the year, excluding SIP flows, the industry approximately witnessed an outflow of 30,000 crore, while Anand Rathi Wealth saw inflows of more than 1,600 crore during the same period. The private wealth vertical has consistently delivered year-on-year growth, and we at Anand Rathi continue to see larger growth opportunities going forward. I will now request Chetan to take us through the digital wealth and the OFA vertical to give you a brief highlight. Mr. Shenoy, over to you.
Thank you, Feroze. The company's digital wealth segment, an extension of its offering for mass affluent segment, also experienced steady growth. The AUM in this business increased by 46% year-on-year, reaching 1,387 crore Revenues from this business grew by 94% year-on-year, reaching 12 crores. The OFA business is a strategic extension for capturing the wealth management landscape to several retail clients through mutual fund distributors using our technology platform. As of September 30th, 2023, OFA has 5,880 mutual fund distributors and has assets under administration on this platform over 1,18,000 crores. Thank you very much. And now I hand over the call to Jugalji to take you all through the financial performance of the company. Jugalji, over to you.
Thanks, Chetan. Thanks, Firoz bhai. Good afternoon, everyone. India's economy is on an upward trajectory, displaying strong performance in recent quarters, with robust growth in key sectors, increased investment, and a promising business environment. The nation's economic outlook is bright, reflecting a positive and resilient trend. Let me start with consolidated financial performance of the company. Our consolidated revenue for the quarter ended September 30, 2023 stood at rupees 189 crores compared to rupees 138 crores in Q2 FY23, registering a growth of 37% year on year. Profit before tax for the quarter stood at rupees 78 crores, registering a 35% year-on-year growth. The PBT margin stood at 41.1% in Q2 FY24. Our profit after tax for the quarter stood at a healthy rupees 58 crores, registering a 34% year-on-year growth compared to rupees 43 crores in Q2 FY23. The PAT margin stood at 30.5% in Q2 FY24 and earnings per share for Q2 FY24 was at 13.8 compared to 10.31 last year. The revenue for H1 FY24 stood at rupees 368 crores compared to rupees 272 crores in H1 FY23, registering a 35% year-on-year growth. Profit before tax for H1 FY24 stood at rupees 149 crores, registering a 35% YOY growth. The PBT margin was 40.4% in H1 FY24. Profit after tax for H1 FY24 registered a 34% year-on-year growth, standing at rupees 111 crores versus rupees 83 crores in H1 FY23. The PAT margin stood at 30.2% in H1 FY24 and earnings per share for H1 FY24 was rupees 26.6 per share compared to 19.85 in the first half of previous year. Return on equity on an annualized basis stood at 42.4% for H1 FY24. Coming to the private wealth business financial performance, for Q2 FY24, our revenue grew by 36% year-on-year to rupees 181 crores. For the quarter end, trail revenue grew by 32% to rupees 60 crores. Profit before tax for Q2 FY24 was rupees 76 crores, a growth of 34% year-on-year. The PBT margin for the quarter ended, it stood at 42.1%. Profit after tax for Q2 FY24 was rupees 57 crores, registering a growth of 33% year-on-year. The PAT margin for Q2 FY24 was 31.2%. For H1 FY24, our flagship private wealth verticals revenue grew by 34% year-on-year to rupees 352 crores. Trail revenue for the first half grew by 25% year-on-year to rupees 109 crores. Profit before tax for H1 FY24 stood at rupees 146 crores, a growth of 33% year-on-year. The PBT margin for the first half stood at 41.5%. PAT for H1 FY24 stood at rupees 109 crores, a growth of 33% YOY. The PAT margin for H1 FY24 stood healthy at 31%. Now we will open the floor for question and answers. Thank you. Over to Mr. Anju.
Thank you very much. I will now begin the question and answer. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use their handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Rohan Mandora from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats on good set of numbers. Sir, if you can share what was the issuances on the structured products for MLDs for the primary and secondary issuances for the quarter. Second was, of the net flows of 1,226 crores, how is it split between equity, debt, mutual funds and market-linked debentures?
Jugalji, can you take this one?
Yeah, sure. See, for the MLD in Q2, the gross issuances was 1,367 crores compared to 1,396 crore in Q1 FY 2024 and 1,121 crores in Q2 of the last year, FY 2022-23.
Okay.
When you do the breakup, the secondary issuances was 278 crores in Q2 FY 2024 compared to 254 crores in Q1 FY 2024.
Sure.
Does that answer your question, Rohan?
Yes, sir. Sir, the net flows of 1,226, what was for the quarter, how much was equity MF, debt MF and structure MLDs?
You're talking about the net inflow?
Yes.
See the net inflow.
Jugalji, I have the numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
1,507 crores of equity mutual fund net flow, -406 of debt and liquid. Total mutual fund of 1,101. Non-principal protected SP -57. Other products, 182. 1,226 is the total. Equity mutual funds, to answer your pointed question, is 1,507.
Sure. Second was, in terms of the MLD originations that we are doing right now, is there any change in mix in terms of the tenors, 3-year, 5-year kind of products? Or is it broadly the same that we have been issuing in the recent months, recent quarters?
Our principal one has. Okay, sorry. Right. Jugalji, you wanna take that?
Yeah, yeah. Please, Jugalji, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Rohan, our principle has been to optimally innovate, and 5 years was something which we statistically found was a better risk reward for our client, and so we continue with the 5-year. There's no change whatsoever.
Sure. In terms of the originations, what was the mix from the non-group entities on the MLDs for this quarter?
90-10, 90 favoring internal.
Okay. Lastly, in terms of the primary issuance run rate, which is around 1,300-1,400 odd crores quarterly, what is the peak rate that we can issue? Are there any constraints, maybe from a regulatory perspective, which can cap that run rate? Just trying to understand from a growth perspective, from FY 2025-2026 perspective, what kind of an origination run rate can we see at a peak level?
There is largely no limiting factor, at least for the next 5-7 years whatsoever.
Sure.
And on top of it, Rohan, as of now, like, we are limiting it to one external vendor and one group entity. The market is very wide. We can always explore and keep on adding the issuers. So there is no limitation whatsoever, even in any near as well as the far future.
Sure. Thanks. I'll get back in queue for further questions, if any.
Thank you, Rohan, for your question.
Thank you very much. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants, you may press star and one to ask the next question. The next question is from the line of Ms. Pallavi Deshpande from Samiksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my question. Just wanted to understand in terms of, you know, the sequential revenue growth is a little slower. Would this primarily be explained by this, decline in the MLD book?
Sequential growth is lower. I don't think that's the case at all. So year-on-year growth is 36% in revenue, and sequential from the first quarter, there is still a growth of about 20%. Okay. No, the revenue growth.
Growth is 6% on Q1Q.
Correct.
So that is a very quite healthy number when you look at the QoQ growth. In case if you are comparing it with the quantum leap which has been achieved in the AUM growth, and that is what makes you feel that the number, the revenue growth is smaller compared to the AUM growth. So there the main thing is that see the sizable growth which has come in the mutual fund AUM. There it is largely the trail income. And trail income accrual will happen over a period of time. So it never happens for the full quarter as and when we keep on adding AUM. So even for some AUM, the revenue might be for few days only in the whole quarter. So that is why it looks smaller when you compare to the AUM percentage. But going forward, it will get normalized and you will see the similar kind of growth. Is that right, Firoz bhai?
Yes, absolutely, Jugal sir. If you normalize a 6% growth, revenue growth in a quarter, that implies 25% for the year. And 24% to be precise. And like you said, the trail revenues come in gradually and they don't come up front. And if you look at the structured product issuance, which is also exactly or almost equal to what it was, because the structured product issuance is an outcome of a portfolio design. And if the portfolio design has a certain percentage, there will be allocation opportunities in structured products or in mutual funds, because when there is a rebalancing. Let's say there is a 30% allocation a client actually has desired to have in structured products. If mutual funds run up, there will be movement from mutual fund to structured product and vice versa. So the revenues are an outcome of client's action derived out of a portfolio construct predetermined. So that the process is driving and revenue is an outcome. Client's return is the primary requisite, and the desired portfolios which are agreed with the client makes the repeated sale practically a few minutes job.
Right. Second, I just wanted to understand, I think you just did mention before that there is no capacity constraint for the non-principal protected products. Would there be any, I understand long term there's no capacity constraint, but in the near term, do you see an overheating in the credit markets and due to which you may be wanting to go slow there?
Not at all, Pallavi. The reason being, when we give our long term guidance of 20 to 25%, we have methods where we simulate at least the next 8 quarters, if not more. Okay, so there is no constraint. From a credit market heating up, will we have difficulty in further issuances? The answer is no. And this is something which we've been doing for the last 11 years. And when you plan, and it is the same to products or three products which have been repeated maybe 1,000 times each. So we believe in doing the same thing over and over again and perfecting it rather than innovating to get our revenues in the back.
All right, sir. Thank you, sir. I'll come back in the queue.
Thank you so much. A reminder to all the participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. Our next question is from the line of Sunil Shah from Shree EMS. Mr. Shah?
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Shah.
Yeah. Am I audible now?
Yes, you are. Please, you can ask your question.
Yeah. Thank you, Firoz. Thank you, everyone in the team. My question is more towards the next 3 to 5 years. Now, if I run with an assumption of, let's say, 25% compounded growth, maybe 12% for us can come because of the market appreciation, because we are selling such products, wherein our AUM will be either 11, 12, 13, 14%. So if I take a 12% growth over that period, and the residual 13% growth can come in from, let's say, incremental AUM from existing clients plus introduction of new clients because of your increase in the RM. So this 25% kind of a growth number for next 3 to 5 years is the broader assumption with which, you know, I'm moving forward. Is there any risk to my assumption which is internal to the organization? External in terms of market is something which I can understand, but is there anything that I'm missing out on this assumption that I'm going ahead with?
Sunil, so thanks for your question. Firstly, like we've given the guidance of 20 to 25%, of course, the 25% compounded growth, not just for 5 to 10, 15 years, and we firmly believe is par for course, point one. Like you rightly said, if the client's portfolios grow by about 12%, then the other 13% needs to come from the three other cylinders of growth. New client addition, penetration into existing clients, and new RM addition. Let me throw some color for you to be able to comprehend the potential of these all these four verticals or four cylinders. We did an analysis. We continually do this analysis. But the latest numbers of all our 10-year-plus clients, the top 200, the return compounded for their portfolios is 13.97, give or take, because this is still not audited. It is in the audit stage. So 13.97% is the compounded return of our 10-year-plus clients with a beta of about 0.57. In the same period, transaction by transaction, Nifty has delivered about 12. So having said which, like you rightly provisioned for the future like 12%, I would say to be on the safer side, 10-11% is what we provision from the automatic growth as time progresses if we do justice to people's hard-earned money. Then coming to the second part, penetration of our existing families, which is 9,212, you will also be very happy to know our top clients who contribute to 20% of the AUM, approximately 50 crore plus, all of them, barring none, were acquired at an average value of 12 crores. So this can give you a sense of the potential of the large number of acquisitions which are happening. With time, we are able to build credibility of reasonable distributors who don't overstate and underdeliver. And when once a client realizes that this is some place where he can trust, there is risk management, numerical risk management, and everything which is given to them is what the relationship manager buys for himself, then penetration becomes simpler. The point I'm trying to make is all our top clients, we have penetrated into the wallet reasonably over long periods of time. And if we have thousands of clients waiting and in the process of the credibility build, the potential is humongous on this second cylinder, which is penetration. When it comes to new client addition, the engine of new clients, as we become more and more visible, is becoming relatively simpler. And I think in the next 1-2 years, the full strategy of marketing seems to be currently showing green shoots. Most of our clients today take pride in referring their friends. There are several clients who want to bring 30, 40 of their friends to make us do events for them. So that whole inflection point, I think, is around the corner in terms of client acquisition so that we can get to 0.751 per RM per month, which is our aspiration. Fourth engine, which is new RM addition, we have 330 odd account managers, which are apprenticed being trained by the 300 odd RMs on a one-on-one relationship. And most of our RM promotions come from, or RM additions, reasonable number, come from this set of those sharp people who emerge themselves as capable of carrying the brand and its ethos in the marketplace. So to answer your pointed question, sorry, a long answer, Sunil sir, I think your assumption is very, very fair. To provision for external risks is why there is a range of 20 to 25%.
Right. Thank you, Feroz, for making me understand this much better. Yeah, clearly, meaning Anand Rathi Paras is one of the only companies in this financial world in India which has carved out a process for, you know, the RM side, the client side, the product side, which is not visible in any other company. Appreciate that a lot. Again, I'll just dwell back on the question, which is the risk part, meaning this is beautiful what we are doing, but anything that you think can, you know, be that minus three sigma kind of an event, which we cannot think about internally, is what I'm trying to understand. Is there anything, or even if it isn't, just maybe I'll be happy to hear that, you know, at this point in time, we do not foresee, but just, you know, on the NLD parts, the relationship that we have with our sister concern, anything on those is what I'm talking about.
Sunil sir, like you rightly said, there could be three sigma, even four sigma or six sigma events, and that's which are not seen. But if you look at how the group has behaved, like Rakesh sir is the longest, one of the longest standing CEOs. I'm saying one of them because I don't know all of them, but 17 years. And we've traversed several challenges reasonably well. I think there is risks which we mitigate. Now, if you look at the regulatory side, the tax side, the supply side, like there was an MLD tax change, and we had predicted that a year before that, and that's why we were not doing listed MLDs.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in public domain, given as this is writing on the wall, it will happen. So regulatory. Now, if there is any change in trail commissions, for example, I'm again taking you out of MLD for a moment. I'll come back to that topic. We know that it is going to be an advantage. Even if there is an yield compression, it's going to be an advantage for us. Why could an yield compression be an advantage? Sounds like an oxymoron. To the third largest distributor, non-banking distributor, an yield compression could be an advantage because it helps me have the same level of interest where my competitors are losing interest. The evidence of that is the lump sum money in equity mutual funds is minus 30,000 crores in the same half year, where we are speaking of 1,800 crores of addition. If you remove the SIP number of 90,000 crores, the total inflow is only 60,000 net, which implies lump sum money has gone up. So from a regulatory standpoint, from a taxation standpoint, from a supply standpoint, now I'm sure you're very interested in the MLD fees, or now as we, now MLD has a definition, so we call it non-principal protected structure product, which is what it is. We have looked at all the four constraints, and we have examined these constraints very, very extensively. Constraints could be supply in terms of borrowing need of the NBFCs, supply of the hedging need of the derivative market, for example, so on and so forth. There are four constraints. All those four constraints have been examined to an AUM of 1 lakh crore in structured products alone. So we like to simulate. We have a written down strategy for each of that. So probably we can give you a reply, Vishalji. We can also do some other one-on-one meetings to explain a simulator. In fact, we've also made a simulator, a very interesting one. Because Sunil sir, you spoke about process. The process has been laid down because in our company, everybody is a relationship manager. Me, Rakesh sir, Chetan Shenoy, even our erstwhile HR head used to manage clients. So there is a lot of experience when you go to the marketplace, and Chetan Shenoy could be my 10th largest RM or even So it's not just for a tick box. We are serious relationship managers who understand what's happening in the marketplace. So putting a process, keeping in mind the RM difficulty, the client need, and the delivery of performance for the client, those processes are being defined and always being strengthened as we learn as we go along.
Thanks. Thanks so much for the explanation. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. So the next question is from Rusmik Oza from Nine Rays Equi Research. Thank you. Mr. Oza, you can go ahead. Hello, Mr. Rusmik Oza. Mr. Rusmik Oza, are you online?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Sorry. Apologies for the disturbance. My question to both Firoz and Chetan was just to understand the strategy of the digital wealth space, because in the last 1 year, the number of customers have gone up only by 10%, A, because it's a platform business, much more fast scalable. And in terms of AUM, it is around 3% of our assets as of today. What's the strategy for this in the next 3 to 5 years? And in terms of profitability, how does it compare now and maybe 5 years down the line, once it is fully scalable, how could it build up?
Mr. Ahuja, the thought process here is to see if we can give HNI kind of advice to mass affluent digitally and still continue our huge cultural principle of giving ethical advice. Because currently the mass affluent buys investment-based insurance plans largely by several other banks and distributors. So that's the thought process. Now coming to your pointed question, what do we see as the future? We've always had this principle of first evolve and then scale. So we are in the evolution stage to understand where we are right, where what's wrong, what's right. So these are profit-making entities and we are still in the process of getting the trial and error to make sure that it becomes a scalable business. So I would not want to comment on its scalability at this stage. Like you would see in the private wealth business, now we are, for the last 2-3 years, putting the pressure on the accelerator because a company which deals in people's money needs to evolve and not scale so soon. I think that's why I would not have projections of or any guidance to give on those businesses. It will be like counting the chickens before they hatch. And we would not want to do that. But yeah, the core principle is, can we give mass affluent a similar advice? Where still there is a relationship manager who can manage 100, 200 clients using the technology platform. Because we have realized that technology standalone does not handhold the client during bad times. Investing is both heart and the mind from an investor standpoint, if you think. We were the only or one of the few wealth managers who had a positive equity mutual fund inflow during the COVID year, whereas the industry lost a few lakh crores between PMS and mutual fund. That's because hand-holding is the most important thing when adversities happen. That's when a person is able to realize the long-term benefit which he sees on paper. So technology standalone is not our thought process. It should help augment an RM to manage 200 clients as against 50, which is what we have as private wealth number of clients. So that's the key fundamental thought process. I thought I'll throw some color on it. Around the expected numbers, it will be a little premature for me to even create a guidance on that and raise hopes.
Thanks for the elaborate answer. That was very helpful. My second question is, you know, since our business is actually, you know, more to manpower and that cost doesn't go up so much, but as earlier Sunil was asking, you know, if you've got 10-11% AUM growth and another additional growth coming from various other aspects, and if you grow at 20-25% per annum for the next couple of years, then is there any scope for the net margins, which may make around 30% right now, to inch up further going forward, or we feel that this 30% is something which could stay for the couple of years?
Mr. Ahuja, can it go up? The answer is yes. Like you rightly pointed out, several costs are variable, and the fixed cost gets amortized over a larger revenue. That could definitely give us operating leverage. Having said which, we believe that investing in the business for future growth being ensured, or at least the probability of future growth becoming higher and higher, we are currently investing in several other verticals, like strengthening our marketing, strengthening our compliance, strengthening our product division, strengthening several other divisions, which require to be made as professional as any company on the street, so that we can ensure the growth. Having said which, we have an LCM kind of a number in our mind when we discuss internally, 40% for PBT and 30% for PAT. In the order of magnitude, we always would like to protect this under most controlled circumstances. But it is also very important to strengthen. Let me give you an illustration of how we've strengthened the front-end product team. We have several research people who currently, because of the digital transformation after COVID, do joint meetings with RMs for effective communication and conviction transmission to the client. And you would be very happy to know, if you're already a shareholder, that we do 25,000-30,000 joint meetings by these 50 product research people who are front-end, and their calendars have four, five, six meetings every single day on a working day and even on holidays. So that's why you would see revenue jumps not resulting in operating leverage currently, because we would want to invest in the business for the enhancement of the probability of the guidance which we have given, so that we can continue the ethos of under-commit and over-deliver.
Thanks, thanks. And last question is on the regulatory side. You know, we've seen, you know, the regulator, especially SEBI, you know, has been very aggressive in the last couple of quarters on trying to introduce a lot of best practices and other things. Do you see any threat on the regulatory side? And if so, are there any solutions which we have?
Mr. Ahuja, for us, we have seen a regulation as an opportunity. Why? Because we have tried to always read between the line of each regulation. Not read the line, but get the essence of it. I can give you several examples, but for the lack of time, I'll just tell you that we look at regulatory changes as opportunities. Why does this become? Because we have interacted with regulators in different informal forums largely, where the regulator wants you to be client-centric. If the expectation of the regulator is mean client-centricity, we want to be three sigma more than mean in terms of client-centricity. That's our aspiration. We don't want to be told to be client-centric. We want to be three sigma more than the average expectation of a regulator. That's why any change has resulted in some degree of fillip for us. And I can list down the seven changes which I have in mind when I'm making this statement. Having said that, again, let me tell you that regulatory changes could be on commissions, which I think the regulator had spoken about, and we had already done a certain conference call also in terms of, I think, Vishalji, we would have made one, where we were trying to decipher that none of the regulatory comments were applicable to us. We were not using B30, we were not using smaller schemes to get more commission. We were not doing NFOs, not even one NFO approved. Forget selling, not even one approved for the last 11 years. I don't think people, when we very well knew our neighbor could make 3% as a competitor, upfront commission, we were still very happy making the 1.09 trail commission, because we think that an NFO doesn't have data enough for me to analyze. So we stuck our ground, so we didn't take the advantages of the generosities on the regulatory front. So when the generosities get curtailed, we are not hampered. Lastly, if you look at the study which we did, India has 670 lakh crores of household savings, which was only 270 lakh crores in 2013. Last part of this data comes from RBI's website. Out of this 670 lakh crores, for all industry participants, it may be surprising to know that there is only 4% of Indian household savings in equity mutual funds. and we have as a country more money in the form of currency than equity mutual funds. This tells us what kind of roles as a part of the industry we have as a duty to make sure that if there are 18 crore people in crypto and 4 crore in equity mutual funds, we have a long way to go as an industry to do the prachar of this platform, which is the most transparent. So I think regulator also understands what is ahead and what kind of distribution infrastructure will be needed. And I think there will be a balance because there is rationality in all our regulators.
Thanks for the detailed answer. I appreciate the kind of work you are doing because I've spent 11 years in the wealth management division historically. So I can relate and understand the kind of quality work you're doing. Best of luck to the entire team. Thanks a ton.
Thank you for your generous words, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to all the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. So the next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Sameeksha Capital. Over to you, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my question again. Just wanted to understand, this is something from an industry perspective, that the small cap funds are now facing a challenge, you know, given their size in terms of their choice for investments getting limited. How do you see this play out for the industry?
Yes, Pallavi madam, now that you've spoken of small cap, with full humility, let me take some credit for the company. On 2nd January 2023, which was much before all this outperformance, in public domain, we had said small cap has to go up because of some data and analytics which we back-tested and front-tested, point one. So we increased in our model portfolio small caps, which was just 5% in the fund level, to almost about 24% much before this rally. So, Pallavi madam, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
So, like you rightly said, small cap as an industry has become larger. The assets which have come into small cap in the month of August was about 4,340 crores, came into small cap as a category. Last month, 2,638 crores in the month of September. Small cap as a name has remained same over the last 5 years, and the next 5 years we will still call the subsequent 250 other than the first 250 as small cap. The English description would remain as small cap, but you will also be happy to know that the top stock of the small cap index, which is the NSE small cap 250, which is what is the concern for a mutual fund investor, as per SEBI, the largest stock is a 36,000 crore market cap, which is Suzlon. So if you look at the average of the top 10 stocks in the NSE small cap 250 index, the smallest one is 20,000 in the top 10 weights. So I think 5 years back, the largest small cap stock was 8,000 crores. Today, again, it is called the small cap, but the largest small cap is 36,000 crores. Unfortunately, English hides more than speaks. So we like to look at the mathematics of it. That's point one. Point two, nothing to say that these two funds, which are really large, like Nippon Small Cap and the SBI Small Cap, which have reached more than 25,000 crores, like Nippon Small Cap had some 160 stocks in the portfolio. But again, SBI Small Cap, which is equally large, had only about 60 stocks in the portfolio. So every fund manager is able to apply his judgment to what he can manage because the universe has become larger. The number of stocks which we call non-micro cap, which is greater than 3,000 crore market cap, has expanded significantly by about 80% in the last 5 years. For a country this large, which India has the largest number of listed stocks in the world, do we think the supply will come? To my mind, yes. But from a mutual fund distributor standpoint, if the person is ahead of the curve in terms of not looking at the rear view mirror to decipher the returns and his actions, we are able to generate the alpha. So the model portfolio which we ran from 1st January 2013, after Direct was introduced, we knew that this is one risk, so we'll have to put in a lot of effort to add value to be a relevant distributor. So we started a model portfolio on 1st June 2013. 1st Jan 2013 is when Direct was introduced. Just past performance advice or distribution would not work. We knew then. So after 10 years, I'm very happy to disclose that all the buying and selling which our model portfolio recommended, if done, would have generated an alpha of 3.97% on Nifty over a 10-year period compounded. So if one were to invest 10 crore rupees as per Anand Rathi model portfolio and agreed on all decisions taken, he would have had 41 crores instead of 30 crores in Nifty. So 11 crores of alpha has been added because we spend 25 people, spend day and night only to understand out of the 384 active funds, which one will be the 14 which will form a part of my portfolio, and the intense and rigorous mathematics in terms of solving differential equation using regression, using holiday NAV, using target NAV. All these are concepts which we are working on, even a copyright on and a patent if possible as a process, should give us that 3% alpha on Nifty. So point is, for a distributor, everything is open. For a industry as such, I think small cap has been redefined, not in English though, but in mathematics.
Great, but great to know about the alpha. Second part just would be that what's the view on the small caps now?
Oh, so I don't know whether this is the right forum. For whatever it's worth, we think that small caps have potential, but there's a lot of liquidity which has chased the top stocks. So we try and see the intersection between. I'll tell you what we did. Because the exuberance in small caps, which is apparent from the dispersion in Nifty returns to the small cap return, especially for this financial year when we moved into small cap, is so large that we wanted to see whether it is time to book profits out of them. We realized that we first made a list of the negative stocks of 25, and then we tried to see the intersection in our model portfolio on an implied exposure basis that was very less. So what is our thought is that out of the 250 small cap stocks, being very, very selective is the name of the game in our humble opinion, which might be completely wrong, but yeah, I'm just telling you what we feel, especially a year where there is an election, and this is one thing from an industry participant out of our, digressing from our result, we did an analysis of the last 5 general elections. Elections generally are perceived by an investor to be an adversity, but all 5 years, or if somebody were to invest just 6 months before election, general election, and exited 6 months after general election, all 5 times he would have made a positive return. That was a surprise to me. Even a 1-year investor, plus or minus 6 months with a general election in the middle, has always made positive return, and 10% is the minimum return and 16 is the average. So we tell the client that elections might seem like an adversity, so don't change your risk and calibrate it too much, unlike what the perception with the decibel of the news going up on this is going to happen. That's what we want to counsel our 9,212 so that they don't behave that equal to the rest of the 4 crores.
Right, sir. Thank you so much, sir. This is very useful.
Thank you so much. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Feroz Aziz, Deputy CEO of Anand Rathi Wealth Limited, for closing comments. Over to you, sir.
I'd like to thank everyone for being a part of this call. We hope we have tried to answer your questions. If you need more information, please feel free to contact Mr. Vishal Sanghvi, our Investor Relationship Head, Rajesh Bhutra, our CFO, our Strategic Growth Advisor, our Investor Relation Advisors. Appreciate your time, and I'd like to extend my heartfelt wishes for an upcoming festive season, and may you have a great weekend. Thank you for your time and patience.
On behalf of Anand Rathi Wealth Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining, and you may now disconnect your lines.